Worms. Freedom Fiends! Live and worldwide, broadcasting from Manchester, New Hampshire. New Hampshire, a mile above free level in Pod Bay 2 Gay. Joining me tonight for this very special episode, Brett. Hey, Brett.
Derek, always so good to be face-to-face with you with just microphones between our faces.
That's right. You're wearing your microphone like a mustache, and so am I. We are in the Rebel Love Studios, a house that Michael built, I call it. Michael Dean of the Freedom Fiends can't be with us tonight. He is waxing his feet and kicking them up and relaxing, hopefully enjoying a night off. So we are in a very special studio that Michael did help to create, and we are joined at the microphone by Rob Voluntarius Rebel.
How's it going, guys?
You're the owner of this studio, and you got help from Michael.
Yes, the Creamy D helped us out with our audio in this studio greatly, so it was an honor to have him call in and help us out, get my sound a higher quality. Yeah, he definitely helped us out a lot.
Cool.
And I could have used his documentary he put up on YouTube like 6 months ago. Man, I could have used that a long time ago. So if there's anyone that wants to start a podcast, watch that YouTube movie he made.
How to Podcast?
Yeah, that's gold.
Yeah, he does a lot of great work in making audio possible. Like, right now, we're connected via Fiend Phone to the studio, which broadcasts these radio waves to space. And Fiend Phone is BIPCOT no-gov licensed software that's freely available to all except government agents.
That's awesome that it goes to space. I mean, that's like no small feat, you know, getting to space.
Yeah, and from my understanding of radio waves, they just keep it going.
Yeah.
So, what I want to talk a little bit about what you do, Brett.
Sure.
But while we have Rob in studio, I wanted to ask you not just about the studio that Michael helped create, but you were doing some very interesting activism today.
It was It felt as if it was a porcupine's wet dream of activism in one day, all wrapped up in one. So Shire Dude had this great idea to do a Manchester pub crawl, and we turned it into a 420 rally to promote the 420 rally that's happening in Concord on the State House next week. So we started off with that, and we roll over to Murphy's, which is a bar in Manchester that accepts Bitcoin. So we hit that as a pub crawl, and then that rolled into a Bitcoin meetup at Strange Brew, which is the world's largest running Bitcoin meetup. But the whole time we're doing that, we're handing out flyers talking about that 420 rally. So throughout the whole journey, we're handing out stuff promoting the civil disobedience that's going to happen next week.
That's amazing. What was people's reaction?
It was pretty good. A lot of times people are like, oh yeah, I can't believe this is still a thing. There's people saying that we're going to go to it. Hopefully they do. There's people asking for extra copies from us so they can give it to their friends.
This is an event that last year had a state representative smoking pot out in front of the State House.
Yeah, it was beautiful. I was there. It was amazing to see that. Unfortunately, last year it landed on Easter, so this year we're hoping that we'll have a lot larger turnout just for some effect that's not on a holiday.
And you were also warning people of a DUI checkpoint.
Yes, there's a DUI checkpoint. Basically, the crazy thing in New Hampshire is the state actually has to tell the public when they do a DUI checkpoint. So we're already telling people that there's going to be a DUI checkpoint on the 24th. Don't drive, on bridge, because that's usually where they have their DUI checkpoint.
And last time you advertised this, some of the bartenders were even letting people know.
Oh, the bartenders are great. A lot of times, the best cop blocking you can ever do is when it's on there. We just go along to the bars and we tell all the patrons, like, you know, hey, don't go on bridge. And we go up to the bartenders. If you want a good tip, tell your patrons not to go drive on bridge. Save them being arrested, and, you know, maybe they'll get a bigger tip.
Well, it's not like they don't have plenty of skin in the game. I mean, if somebody, bartenders can get in trouble for if somebody is arrested for a DWI. That has happened. Yeah. So, absolutely.
Yeah, sometimes the whole bar can get hit, too. Oh, right?
Well, that's how it would happen, and then I guess, like, maybe punishment would be handed down from above. But, yeah, the bar would get hit. The bar would get fined. That definitely happens. Sure.
And what's amazing, whenever we do that, a beautiful thing here in Manchester is people understand what cop blocking is. Like, they get it.
They love the cop blockers.
They love the cop blockers. Yeah, they know who they are, and they get that. And people will come up and shake their hands and, like, want to buy us a drink and stuff like that. Like, it's beautiful to see, like, that kind of activism be, taken in well by locals.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of, you mentioned cop blockers, and those are people who video record the police in different interactions with the public. Did you hear about the founder of Cop Block this week being arrested for wearing a hat in a courtroom?
No. It's like history repeating itself.
Yeah.
It's crazy because, those who have followed Cop Block for any amount of time know that the founder was arrested once previously for asking a judge a question about a man wearing a hat in a courtroom. And the judge didn't answer him, but in fact arrested him. And now this same man, Adamo Freeman, has been arrested for the very same crime. So there's a bit of hilarity in it. It wouldn't be as hilarious if he weren't released so quickly. The judge heard about the news. He was arrested on a Friday. Adamo had an emergency hearing on a Saturday. A judge came in to adjudicate and release him and said that he respected what Cop Block does.
The judge said that.
The judge said this.
Wow.
Well, you know, some people like accountability, even in government, I guess. Who would have thought?
But I saw it as like sort of like a gang member congratulating not another gang member. Like, it's not really like that, but it's like, hey, you've created something, you know, and you have a force of people. Like, they probably got a lot of phone calls is what I'm imagining.
Sure. Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
There wasn't an organized call flood that was advertised, but what typically happens when a cop blocker who's well connected with a network of supporters is arrested is people will call the jail or call the courtroom.
We probably all made some of those calls through the years. Yeah. I remember calling Greenfield, Massachusetts.
Really?
Absolutely.
That was fun. What was that for?
Same guys got arrested down there. It was the whole wiretapping thing. They got call flooded. That never happens. So it's really overwhelming for cops and bureaucrats when, you know, there's actually some kind of pushback.
Yeah.
And there certainly was. That was a big incident. That was many years ago.
Yeah.
We've been at it for a while here.
Well, the last time that this man, Adamo Freeman, was in jail was here in Manchester.
Yes.
You both live in Manchester.
Yes. Yeah, I actually saw an interesting transition coming here when it comes to the topic of activism, because you live in Keene, New Hampshire.
Yes.
And I know we have
the capital of the world.
We have a worldwide audience. I mean, forget worldwide. This show, I hear, goes into space. So we have to, I know we can't just like focus on local issues, but we can abstract that, I think, to talk about different styles of activism and maybe what produces better results. Now, obviously, we're in a much bigger city here in Manchester than Keene. It's easier to poison the well in a place like Keene, right? Because more people can find out what you're doing. Mm-hmm. People can gang up against you. So I've lived in Manchester for a while, and we're all part of the Free State Project, you know, which is this movement to move eventually, first of all, to get 20,000 signers and then get movers to to New Hampshire to hopefully change a small state to make a small state more free. A small state, mind you, surrounded by some very unfree states. So it has been a real challenge. But there's, I think, a real chance for not just activism, but outreach in Manchester. Like, Rob, you're saying that it's already kind of resonating with people here. I mean, cop block is a pretty... It's a pretty controversial thing. I mean, you understand that a lot of people would be like, well, wait a minute, that's the police.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's fair. And I understand that people would be apprehensive about that. So, but I'm interested to see what will happen in Manchester, this big city. I don't know how many people live here. It's got to be at least 100,000.
It's at least 100,000. Yeah.
Over the next couple years as this community continues to grow. It's actually really exciting.
You know, I was thinking about that on my way over as I was driving the drive from Keene to Manchester, which porcupines, people who live in New Hampshire, will make many times throughout their Shire lives.
I make it about once a month.
Yeah. And I was thinking, you know, I was just at an event, a social event called Social Sundays, which has been happening. I think it's the longest running social event if not in Keene, then in New Hampshire as part of the Free State Project, where people get together at a bar every Sunday and just there's no agenda. It's just hanging out and socializing. Yeah. And there are usually about 20 or 30 people, but I can envision a day. I mean, it started with only a handful, and I can envision a day when it's going to be hundreds or thousands. And really, it blows my mind to think about a community developing like this. I think it's all probably thanks to the...
That was like today during this pub crawl when we hit Strange Brew. We had 45 people there. So like for those that have gone to that meetup there, we usually have the back room, which is three to four tables as it is. That was filled, and we had to fill a whole other table outside out of that. And having over 40-plus porcupines, libertarians, volunteers, all like in the same area congregating at the same time, and that was normal.
And you guys have the longest running Bitcoin meetup. Is it in the world?
Yes, it's the longest running in the world. That was founded by, I believe, the Harvey brothers.
Right here in Manchester.
Right here in Manchester.
So is Manchester the freest place in the world?
I want to say it's the freest, maybe, but it definitely, you feel the freest being in this community because you can be whoever you want to be. And that alone is just a liberating ideology to have because you can be around people that respect you.
You could be who you want to be anywhere.
Yeah, within reason, but here it's just more, so much more feels socially acceptable to me.
Okay. Same question, Brett. Is Manchester, you live here, is it the freest place in the world?
You know, there's so many different ways to measure freedom. I think that is a topic for a future segment because what an open-ended, wonderful question you've asked.
We'll find out after this trip to the free market. Worms! Whoa, wait a minute.
Meow.
Meow. Meow.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
LRN.FM needs your help getting our satellite signal back on in Africa. Our satellite provider had us on at no charge from 2012 through February of this year when they pulled the channel off the air. Now we're trying to raise $22,000 to continue reaching people with the message of liberty in places where it's needed most. Please visit our Indiegogo fundraiser at africa.lrn.fm. Give what you can and share the link with your friends. africa.lrn.fm.
Meow.
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 Yeah.
It's the Freedom Fiends, and we're back. I was asking, what's the freest place in the world? I think about this all the time. And Manchester is in the running. There's like Manchester, Acapulco, like Costa Rica, Iceland. What are some of the other, people say Finland is really free? Amsterdam. Not Beijing. What's the
My
Singapore?
Understanding is that most of Scandinavia was very socialist. Like, I know Sweden for sure is very unfree. Now, I mean, Finland is right next door, and that doesn't mean at all that it's unfree. I mean, look at the states that surround us, as I was saying in the last segment. Maine, Massachusetts, New York is not too far away from here. No freedom there. Yeah. So, you know, it's an interesting question. I mean, I guess it depends on what freedom means to you. Like, different places, like the Heritage Foundation has an index of the freest places, but if we went to the Heritage Foundation and started talking to people there, we might have very different ideas about what freedom means.
Yeah, you know? Like economic freedom, how easy it is to start up a business and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I'm finding out that's still pretty difficult, even in one of the freest places, supposedly freest places, like New Hampshire. I'm a part of a thrift store that some friends and I have started up as a business.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of hoops to jump through for the government. There's, like, inspectors, and you can't have this and that type of sign. I've talked about that. So there's not that much economic freedom, even in a place that's supposedly so-called free. It will, and that's here in New Hampshire. So I don't know. What's your impression, Ben? Is it the freest place you've been?
Even in Manchester, you know, I was close with someone a few years ago who moved here from New Jersey, which is a super unfree place.
Yeah.
And they wanted to, or she wanted to start a business. And she wanted to open a restaurant.
Cool.
And it was a really cool idea. It was going to be like a New Jersey food. New Jersey has its own cuisine.
Yeah.
And do like gaming. Like it was this gaming theme.
Like skee ball.
Or even maybe it was just kind of a gaming cafe.
Or like poker.
No, like video games. Video game monitors,
yeah,
you know, around the place.
All right.
So it would be kind of this arcade restaurant. It was a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes other people who already own restaurants wind up on city councils.
They
make rules that make it hard for new people to run businesses. So I think what it came down to is you needed some kind of air vent system. It was like some kind of hood that would blow hot air in the winter, so people weren't tempted to shut the vent system off because they'd get cold in the winter.
Okay.
Now it sounds ridiculous,
right?
But it was like an extra $20,000 expense that she hadn't budgeted for. Now, I'm not telling this story perfectly because this was many years ago, but my point is that it was a ridiculous regulation.
Yeah, it's like, here, I want to start a restaurant. And then you're like, okay, I need utensils and napkins, ramekins. Let me think of all the things I
know.
I need.
Isn't it enough that, like, I have to find ramekins? Yeah. I have to deal with all your regulations,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, and then you have to go shopping for the best kind. So that's a whole nother headache. But yeah, no, I can't believe that people have put up with it to this level. That's one thing that frustrates me a lot as I'm driving around. Thinking, like, how do we get this way? How do we come this far that I have to ask permission to open a restaurant or to open a thrift store or even drive my car down the street? This is one thing. I promised myself I wasn't going to bring it up, but since I did, hey, I've got this. Remember last time I was on a show with you was your show, School Sucks, and I had just crashed my car. So I got a new car. It's been sitting there for about a month, ready to register, and I'm trying to register it, but the government won't get my like paperwork. They won't give me the permission to drive on the roads.
Why
basically.
Not?
Because they don't like the paperwork that came with the car. So they're like, the guy that I bought it from, he bought it from his mom, and his mom bought it from his brother. And so like they didn't go through the paperwork through the state to transfer the property properly. And so now that he's sold this to me, the state's like, I don't know if you didn't steal this or not, which I get. That's a valid, you know, that's a valid use of government in general. Like, if you're going to say that government is necessary.
Yeah,
like,
protecting property.
Okay,
sure.
Yeah. Right. We want to make sure that you didn't steal something. I get that. But don't treat me like a criminal until there's, like, a legitimate reason to, right? Don't say that I stole this car out of nowhere. No one's complaining that this car is stolen, right? I just want to be able to drive it without these ridiculous tags that need to go on the front and back.
So are you making any progress, or?
No, it's been a month. I can't get this guy that I bought the car from to even send the paperwork in, you know, because what am I going to do? Strong arm this guy to be like, hey, follow up with the state, do the proper paperwork? So I'm thinking, what this leaves me with very few options.
Yeah,
one is forge it myself, which certainly I couldn't do, and then one is to drive it without the registration, which could be fun.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Meow, meow.
I knew I was going to be on for 3 days, and I didn't practice meowing.
Oh, yeah, you got to meow. It's meow therapy, man. Makes you feel good.
I know.
I forgot to mention that this show warms up your locus coeruleus to a toasty and tasty 375 degrees. So be ready for it. Can you feel it?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm feeling it. Also, I forgot to ask you if you're safe. Have you been contacted by the government?
No, I... I got a Comcast bill today, and that's as close as I got. It's been a while since I've heard from the government.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm always hearing from them. A police officer was at my house the other night, and I was too afraid to answer the door, truth be told.
Sure,
I got ready with my Bamboozer app. I was ready to live stream. Bamboozer is an app that like broadcasts to Facebook and all your social networks, lets people know that something's going down, and you can live stream a video right away. And I didn't hit the record button because I didn't end up answering the door. I know that if they are knocking, they do not have a warrant.
Right.
If they have a warrant, they're not going to knock. They're just going to come in.
Well, knocking is so much less fun than kicking down a door. So for a police officer. So, yeah, you could see that.
So he was just there to drop off a flash drive. A person with whom I live let him borrow it.
Yeah.
And he was giving it back. It was just as simple as that.
Nothing
to be afraid of. I know it is, because like when a police officer comes to your door, I don't know what you think, but I'm thinking like, uh-oh, trouble. This is not good. I don't want him here. He's got bad news. But it's not often just like, oh, I'm just dropping something off.
You've had so many more negative experiences with the police than I've had. Even though I'm a great many years older than you, but you sought some of them out.
Aren't most people's experiences negative?
My last two, hey, look, I know what the theme of the show is, but I have to say my last two experiences with the police were pretty positive. And
that's good. That's great.
They're both stateies, New Hampshire state troopers.
Yeah.
And I do this thing called inspection sticker activism, where I don't get my car inspected.
Okay, I follow. That's great.
So, but rarely do you get pulled over for it, and I hardly drive at all, and my car is pretty safe. You know, I'm not trying to hurt anybody or myself. So, I used to have a Volkswagen Passat, and German cars were terrible for computer errors and emissions problems.
Okay.
So it was really hard to pass that New Hampshire emissions test, you know? Anyway, it's just
which
kind of...
Which not all states have.
Yeah. Now, I have a Nissan now, but it's just kind of become this force of habit that, like, why would I spend $50 on that?
Yes. You have to pay money to get inspected by the state.
And they give you a sticker. How insulting.
And they
stickers.
Must.
Stickers for adults.
Stickers, well, it's not as insulting as the tag. I think the tag is more offensive because that's like a branding. It's like a cow tag.
The stickers reminds me of school. Like, now, you can go and you can buy stickers. You can collect stickers, you know, if you want.
Yeah.
But this thing where you did good, here's a sticker. Right? That's
right.
School. Now, if you have a sticker collection, fine, that you created, you know, of your own volition. That's different than the government slapping a sticker on your car and saying it's okay for you to drive it.
I'm okay with the you did good sticker. I'm not okay with the you did bad sticker. There's the rejected sticker that you also get when you go through inspection and you fail. They say, sorry, you're gonna have to come back in a week or two and try again, Tommy.
No, I say this whole system of carrots and sticks has to go. No good stickers, no bad stickers. No stickers for adults unless they are choosing to collect them.
You should take that up with Vermin Supreme. He's probably the only candidate who might actually follow through with that one.
Yeah, most candidates don't have much to say about stickers. They have these like distraction issues, like gay marriage. But nobody wants to talk about
stickers. It's a boring one. I don't like that one.
How did we get here? Because I felt like, my positive experiences with the police, right?
The statey.
Two stateys in a row. And it was like within a couple weeks of each other, I feel. Now, they weren't like amazing, life-changing positive experiences, but they were surprising because they were state police.
Yeah.
So I'll just tell you one for the sake of time here. Statey pulls me over. It is for inspection. He comes up to the car window. He goes...
So he got his hand on his gun?
No. No, and he came... I was on the highway, so he came to, like, the safe side, the passenger side, you know, the car. Okay. And...
Why would he come to the passenger side?
Yeah, so he doesn't get hit.
Yeah.
You know, right. I think they're doing that more and more, I've noticed.
Yeah.
And roll down the window, and, you know, I've got my documentation ready.
Yeah.
He says to me... I'm not making this up. Thank you for pulling over so quickly.
What?
Yeah.
Have you ever been thanked for pulling over?
No. And then...
Why would that be an issue?
Yeah.
I mean, an extra 100 feet?
Yeah.
What's the big deal? I mean, what's the span of people not pulling over? Do they leave this guy on a mile-long chase before they pull over?
It was kind of like a high-traffic area. And, you know, maybe I just, like, pulled right over.
Uh-huh.
I did a good job. I mean, it was woo! It was like a sticker-worthy...
Oh, yeah, gold
good
star.
Job.
Here you go.
Gold star-worthy job pulling over. So... he comes up and he thanks me, and I remember I was driving back. I was helping somebody who had just gotten a new car, and we were trying to get it inspected, and the state's computers were down.
Oh,
so we couldn't. You need to hook up the car to the state.
Yeah,
to get the inspection.
And the state was broken.
And the state was broken that day. So. This actually becomes a happy ending, though, because we're frustrated about not getting the inspection. But as I get pulled over, I know he's writing me a ticket for this inspection. He's there for a while. He comes back. He says, and I'm not kidding again.
Wow.
I'm really sorry I took so long.
What?
He said, I'm really sorry I took so long. Our computers are down. So... Just get that taken care of soon.
Wow.
You know, the other time the guy wrote me a ticket and he said, I have to write you a ticket, but I apologize. And if you go and get the car inspected in the next 7 days, we'll throw the ticket out. So,
wow.
Not as positive, but those are two noteworthy positive police experiences.
Those are pretty good. You know, I just had a positive experience with a state trooper in New Hampshire, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I do wonder if this is coincidence or maybe just their training is different, because I hear different things about police officers in different places.
Yeah, sure.
L.A., very bad.
Oh, the worst.
NYPD, famously bad. Killing people constantly. Albuquerque, same thing. But in New Hampshire, you don't hear enough about, like, we've got pretty good cops. I'm not going to complain. Michelle Seven famously did activism in New Hampshire, drove around for years without registration, went to jail for it, left jail in her unregistered car,
mm-hmm.
and the police just continued to leave her alone for the rest of... the time here. And similarly, with me, I was pulled over. This time, I think the officer lied because I was not speeding, but he said I was going 72 and a 55. It's like, why were you going so fast? And I said, I don't answer questions. And I was video recording. I let him know that ahead of time. He had no problem with it. He went back, came... within a minute or so, and just said, all right, I'm going to just leave you with a warning here today and, you know, have a nice day. And it was a nice little positive interaction. I guess I'm so used to, like, all right, we're going to search your car. We're going to, you. You're going to jail. And it could be for anything. It could be for something you don't even know happens.
Yeah. You know, there are people, too. And I think, you know, there's something that's important. There's this enemy imagery that's so easy to do, right? Like, the easiest thing is always to be negative. And I hope people aren't tuning in right now who are regular listeners. And, like, did they switch for, like, a pro-cop show?
Yeah.
Because, obviously, I admire the work you've done. I admire the bravery that you've had to stand up to police injustice. And, of course, that goes for lots of people like you as well. And there's plenty of it, police corruption. And the whole idea, you know, is kind of unsettling to me of how the police interact with people.
Yeah.
But I think this enemy imagery doesn't really help anybody. It's not helping.
Right.
It's not helping our own psyche to see people automatically as enemies because they are a category.
You're so right. You're so right. That's what's been really making me lose my mind about when the police officer came to my door and yeah. I didn't want to answer it. Like, I knew him. Yeah, his name is Jason Short. He's arrested me before, and he's been very friendly in court.
Yeah.
So, like, and he even said, oh, I wish I could hang out with you guys and smoke a cigar on the front porch, because a lot of people chill out on the front porch, but where I live. And he knows us, and he'll wave, and it's so personal. It's not, he's not my enemy. He might be a frenemy, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Use that term,
exactly.
But it's like, I don't wish him ill will. I don't need to be afraid of him. He doesn't have anything against me. He's just a guy in a suit, right? Like you said, we're all people. So it is relieving to drop that imagery and just be like two people.
Well, we're just people, but we have all of these obstacles between us, right? Like, they have this training. They have this obedience. They have this conformity. They have this fear. You know, like, fear is something that's kind of built into the policing job today. And it's not just fear of your superiors, but it's also fear of people. We see what people, the police can get away with as far as shooting unarmed men and women in the name of officer safety. So there's a lot of obstacles to connection that are built into not just policing, but a lot of government jobs, right? They have to be obedient. They have to be conformist. They can't be, you know, overly energetic about their questioning of the systems they serve. So, but there is a person in there, you know, behind all that. And I think that that's an important thing to remember. And I wonder if it is worth, you know, trying to make connections, because these people are, you know, our neighbors.
Yeah.
And they are, I think if bad things happen, right, when the S hits the F, they will probably be, you know, concerned about protecting their families. Like, I don't see them as the people who are going to be, in the end, you know, marching down the streets shooting people, like the local police of Keene or Manchester.
I guess it depends where you live. I don't feel that way here. Certainly not about the police that I've encountered in New Hampshire or anywhere like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is kind of personal. Have you ever been to one of those, like, donut with a cop days? Coffee with a cop?
No.
They do those around here in Manchester, and some of the activists have actually gone and rubbed elbows with these guys. I think it'd be a good idea to do everywhere.
Absolutely.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Hey, this is some Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
For all you nocturnal people staying up late listening to the radio, good morning. Good early morning to you, or good night if you're on the West Coast. We are in Rebel Love Studios for the first time producing The Fiends in a studio that actually has a cat. Well, most times I think The Fiends is produced in a studio that has a cat, but not for me. So no. This is an exciting treat.
Yeah, you know, I've never been a cat person myself. And,
really?
No, I think
did
I
you
could,
have cats?
I've had cats before. Okay.
So you're a cat guy. You've had cats.
It's funny. During the break, we were talking about my past relationships.
Yeah.
And I lost cats twice.
In the breakup?
In my life, I have
you
lost.
You didn't just like, where did this cat go?
No. But cats will do that. I mean, you know. If they're,
if they're on their own adventure. Yeah, but only for a little while.
But they will go on their own adventures. No, yeah, twice in my life, I lost cats. No, three times.
Oh, no.
Girls want to get cats with you. They like this.
And, that's what they're taking.
You know, you're the guy and you say, yes, yes, I will get a cat. I love you. We will get a cat together.
And it's a sacrifice that you make.
I don't. No,
hey, I will put up with a cat for
you. I see why people like cats. You know,
I like cats.
Yeah, they have their moments.
They're fluffy, so you know they're fun to pet, and they'll chill there with you. They're not really protectors, but they're good chilling partners.
I don't. There's something about the idea that this is an animal that has been genetically engineered over time down to a size where it can't kill me.
Yes.
And that's right. The only thing. Thousands of years of human intervention.
It still could if it scratches you or bites you.
Yeah, well, that's what I would worry about is cats killing me in my sleep.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not trying to put fears in people's heads. I'm not trying to be, you know, paranoid about cats. I've had some lovely cats. But when I say I'm not a cat person, maybe there's this trauma attached to losing these special cats. You know, so that's something maybe I need to just like work out on my own. And, you know, I come back to The Fiends, who knows, months down the road, and I resolve these cat issues.
Yeah.
I've got and I'm actually owning a cat by myself. So it could be interesting.
Well, good luck.
Thank you.
It's exciting to have one. I'm allergic to cats, so I don't hang around them often. I had one growing up and I think they're fun. You know, they're good partners and all. But yeah. I wanted to talk with you instead, changing gears a bit, about Rand Paul's pants.
Yeah, let's do it.
So, I've been watching the campaign thing heat up, because I'm like a news junkie, and even though, as an anarchist, I try and stay away from federal politics, and
like
politics in general, I find it entertaining. You know, they say, like, Washington is Hollywood for ugly people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm following these sagas. Like, I don't really watch Game of Thrones or Better Call Saul or any of these TV shows, but I will follow the theatrics of national elections because I think there's a lot of orchestration that goes into them that can be very interesting. So Rand Paul is one of these people running for national politics.
Yeah.
He made an announcement and came here. To New Hampshire first, because he wants to get some nomination. New Hampshire's like first in nominating primaries.
Yeah,
right?
New Hampshire and Iowa are always big, small, even though they're small in stature, they're big politically.
Yeah, they're important because people, what?
They just get the first primary, so they're kind of used as barometers for how the election is going to go.
So he came here, and he's wearing jeans, which I think is a great choice.
Mm-hmm.
Really connects with the people. I wear jeans. I'm wearing jeans right now.
Me too.
They're American, so
you
can't argue with
that. Two potential Rand Paul voters right here.
Yeah.
In jeans.
I'm liking it.
Yeah.
But they don't look good. His jeans were baggy around his butt, they were like way too, like, I guess they were the equivalent of mom jeans. They were dad jeans.
Yes.
And like, Rand, if you're gonna go for the jeans look, be a Calvin Klein model.
Absolutely.
Go all the way. Be Abercrombie. Don't wear diaper pants here.
I've never seen a politician good at wearing jeans.
I've never seen a politician particularly good at wearing pants.
No, yeah.
Except for Kennedy. I think Kennedy wore some nice boating
pants.
Shorts.
Yeah, absolutely.
They looked right on him. Also, like penny loafers. I could see that on Kennedy. Loafers and a rugby shirt. We just need another Kennedy. Rand is no Kennedy.
No. They're always making more Kennedys.
Maybe Hillary can do it for us.
That could be a topic.
I want a clone of Hillary and Jeb Bush, both together as one president.
Yes. I think that's exactly what we need. That's very Game of Thronesy, the uniting of powerful families.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Meow. 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 Meow.
Meow. Wow. Freedom fiends. Yeah. I don't like to talk about politics too much. But I do like it when the politician people start promising all sorts of things for the people. And they can laugh.
Mm-hmm.
They'll promise anything.
Yeah.
New car. I don't know. What's something they actually... Free healthcare for everybody. That's one of the promises. Remember promise Guantanamo Bay? Closing that? That
was yeah. I'm hearing a lot about taking America back. As a promise.
Really? Is that one of the promises that's happening this year?
Yep. Rand Paul is going to take America back.
Oh, I've heard him say, with the Constitution in one hand and the Bill of Rights in the other. And like to cheering crazy applause.
He could get like a little book that has both of them.
Yeah,
like in it, he could have a free hand, you know, for more fighting.
yes, he could. So what's his deal? What's he running on?
Well, the thing that I've heard the most is definitely this: take America back. I mean, obviously, we know
from whom.
From Rand
Paul. Did Obama take it?
Well, that's always the question. Like, who took America?
Obama took America and he won't give it back.
Here's what I think it is. I think he's a conservative. I think he has some liberty leanings, or at least he wants to.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, he is the son of Rand Paul. And that doesn't mean that you have to have anything in common with your dad. But he seemed like he was speaking the right language on a number of issues. He's an interesting character. He's kind of a chameleon. Like,
why?
I'll see him go on Sean Hannity or Bill O'Reilly and kind of fit in there. But then I'll see him on Real Time with Bill Maher. And
does he fit in there, too?
He did. He did a really great job.
It's because he wears jeans.
You couldn't even see his pants.
How do you know if you need to vote for him if you can't see his pants?
That's true. Well, that's what cost Mitt Romney the election. I'll tell you what.
It was his magic underwear, right?
It was his jeans.
Oh yeah, he did have bad jeans, but he also wears magic underwear.
Now that should
have been the real reason why he was unelectable.
That certainly could have affected the appearance of his jeans, right? Because we don't know as non-Mormons what this magic underwear looks like.
That's true. I'd never inspected it.
Right.
I imagine it probably had nothing to do with his
You don't think
chances.
That could throw off his jeans game, though?
Oh,
you know
right.
What I mean?
Okay. Yeah. I follow. Okay, yeah. So he didn't have it in the jeans department. The real question is, can Hillary wear a pair of jeans?
No.
Why not?
I don't think so. I don't know. She seems to be really fond of pantsuits.
Yeah, but if Rand can wear jeans, then it's okay for political candidates who are running for national office to wear jeans. Okay. So that opens the door for everybody.
All right.
That should mean John McCain in jeans, which I think he's done. Is it just guys who can wear jeans?
No, I think somebody needs to raise the stakes and start wearing jean jackets.
Whoa, why are they not wearing jean jackets already?
Imagine.
Yeah, Bruce Springsteen music, jean jackets. It's American as apple pie.
American flag handkerchief in the back pocket of another whole garment made out of denim.
That would be so cool.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. So I watched a lot of Rand Paul videos today. Yeah. I didn't want to, but we talked before the show, and you said, I might like to talk about Rand Paul tonight. I said,
I'm sorry I told you that.
I don't know much about Rand Paul.
Let me get educated.
You know, he did I did see this one cool video of him being interviewed where the person wanted to be very confrontational with him.
Oh,
and
really?
He did this cool like meta analysis of the news where he's like, no, ask me a question, because there was like,
I did see that interview.
You know, there's this big setup where
he's like, you're editorializing.
Yeah.
Right?
Like you flip flopped on this issue and then you flip flopped on this issue and then you flip flopped on this issue. And he was like, I mean, he was a little combative, he lost his cool a little bit, but he did a good thing. He showed the viewers, like, this is how the news actually works. This is not an interview. This person doesn't care anything about what I have to say.
Right.
They're here to tear me down. And he called them out on it. And I thought that was pretty cool.
I thought that was awesome, too. Yeah, I forgot. Do you remember what station that was? Where the interview was taking place?
No, it could have been... gosh, I'll tell you, these real, the old networks, watching them, like ABC, CBS, NBC, their news and like their conversations, it's like watching an elementary school play. Like the way people are just fumbling scripts, and how they don't break script and how they're like nervous to stick to the scripts. They're not like the pundit shows where there's at least a little kind of spontaneous back and forth.
But do you think that's an effect of the new 24-hour news cycle, that these people who are delivering live news as opposed to the punditry who can have like more time to prepare for their shows, these news people, they're just basically actors who read live scripts all day.
Yeah.
You know, there's like a skill to that that's even some great actors can't audition on live scripts.
Yeah. Yeah, I just find it really insulting, because what we're supposed to believe is that we're getting information from
this. Yeah.
You know, and it's just something that seems so prepared that it's supposed to look like a conversation, but it isn't. It's just people reading a script, and I really don't care for that. So I liked that Rand Paul called at least one woman out.
Well, good. He should be a professional pundit then, instead of running for president.
Oh, I think he will be one day.
He's going to turn into one of those. Who's that guy? He was fat and then turned skinny. He ran for president as a Republican. I'll think of it later. He's on Fox.
Mike Huckabee.
That's the one.
Yeah. Turned fat again, actually.
Oh, yeah. So few can really keep it off.
Right. But, you know, he really, I think he plays the bass.
Rand?
No, Mike Huckabee. He plays the bass. He had a show.
Why didn't he become president?
I know.
He can wear jeans and play the bass. And he can wear different sizes of jeans. He's got a range.
Yeah, exactly. Range is important. So I don't know what to make of Rand Paul, but what I really don't know is why people who seem to think so much like us are like fairly excited about him.
Yeah, that blows my mind.
Does it bother you?
Yes. Yeah, it bothers me. But whenever I see friends of mine, like acquaintances on Facebook and people who love freedom and have connected with me in some way throughout the years, when I see them on Facebook supporting Rand, I take it as an opportunity to promote a couple of things. First of all, Vermin Supreme, who is an alternative candidate, gave me a real struggle last election cycle. I was torn 50-50 between Rand Paul's father, Ron, and Vermin Supreme. And even walking into the voting booth, I wasn't sure who I was going to pull that lever for. And it ended up being for Ron Paul, because I saw a sign right before I walked in. You know, that does have an effect. All those people who stand out there with signs on election days.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, vote for this guy. I think a lot of people are like, oh, I saw that sign outside. I'm going to do that. I know I fell victim to that.
I think that's why these Bushes and Clintons are so popular, because people
have seen the name.
They say, I know that name. I've seen that name before.
Yeah. Better the devil you know than the devil you don't, right? So well, it's like, we'll take... What? No, people are... I think we're...
People
are
believe
like,
that, sure, yeah.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah.
Not that the Clintons and Bushes are devils that you would prefer.
Exactly.
Probably.
Hey, how would you describe Vermin Supreme to somebody who was unfamiliar? Because I've really never been able to figure out what to make of him.
Well, it depends on how you look at him. I view him as something of a work of live art,
living art.
And he is running for president. That's not a joke. He has run for president, I think, what, 3 times or more.
Mm-hmm.
And he never gets very far, but he does get to campaign and attend C-SPAN events. Like, last election cycle, one of the things he did was turn his opponent gay by sprinkling glitter on him.
Mm-hmm.
He famously wears a boot on his head as part of a look that he doesn't wear jeans. He wears pants and lots of ties.
He makes up for the lack of jeans with multiple ties.
Yeah, he has a lot of ties on, which means like more authority, I would think.
Yeah.
More ties, more power. And then he has a few campaign promises. His campaign platform includes a mandatory toothbrushing law.
Okay.
So it's mandatory for all Americans to brush their teeth.
Once a day or...
I'm not clear on what the rules are.
I've only ever been a once-a-day brusher. I don't like the way coffee tastes on brushed teeth. I mean, I brush them before bed. You'd have to be a maniac not to, but...
Right. You don't like to brush your teeth in the morning? It sort of wakes me up.
Maybe I should get into it. I mean, maybe it would be a new routine that could be life-altering in some positive way.
Yeah, try it out.
You really got to rinse, though, to, you know, be ready for the coffee, I would think.
No, I just suffer through coffee that tastes weird the first couple
like
of sips.
Huh? Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. There's got to be some kind of remedy for that. What's some kind of food you could eat in between to change your palate, to get it ready for the coffee?
Sardines.
Or just a packet of sugar.
My advice to people, as a health, I'm a fairly health conscious guy, I say, stay away from sugar. Do brush your teeth in the morning. Derek's turned me around on that. Follow it up with half a can of sardines. You don't have to do a whole can of sardines right in the morning, and then you're ready for coffee.
So the real reason I want to vote for Vermin Supreme is because I think he does the best job of any candidate of pointing out how ridiculous the political cycle and all of it is.
Yeah.
Like, if a candidate who wears a boot on his head and like 7 different ties can make it to national politics, turning his opponents gay with glitter and running on campaign promises of mandatory toothbrushing laws. Like, if that can happen, the whole thing is a joke. Whole thing is a joke. Like, he reveals to me the fact that politicians will promise anything and, you know, never deliver. Like he says, I think it's even one of his campaign slogans is, I'll promise anything.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, one of my favorite discussions, and this was especially true in 2012, was job creation. You know, this is it's always very vague. Because they're not like Vermin Supreme like promises, like Obama says, I will use wizardry to bring about more jobs, and Mitt Romney said, no, I will wrap my legs around the economy and secrete jobs into it. You know, there never is anything specific about it. It's just always a promise that's there.
You're
and people
listening
seem to like
to
it.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
For some reason in this country and in a bunch of Western world, it's okay to just judge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about FiendPhone.
FiendPhone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's FiendPhone.com, FiendPhone.com, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, phone.com.
FiendPhone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Meow. Meow.
Worms.
Meow.
Wames. That's what Lou says.
Wames?
He says Wames when he says hello and goodbye. It's like his aloha. He's morphed worms into Wames. It's like a New Yorker thing, but he's from Michigan. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, anyway. that is not a Michigan accent.
No. I don't know what Michigan is all about. Like, they got their own thing. They're sort of like blending with Canada. New Hampshire sort of has that thing going on, too. We blend with Canada a bit. It's so weird, the little arbitrary lines between us. Like, I can't go to Canada. I need a passport. I don't have one right now.
Have you ever been?
Yeah. I went when I was a kid.
Yeah?
And I guess I had a passport then. And I went and saw Niagara Falls. I got some fudge. And, you know, it was cool. It was ridiculous. I love Canada. I want to go back. But I'm not allowed. The government paperwork. I don't have that.
There's got to be like a river that you could cross.
Should I just do it that way?
In like a dinghy. You could get in.
Yeah, I'll canoe in. With my denim jacket, they'll let me ride in.
Absolutely. I enjoyed all my trips to Canada, too. Montreal is a beautiful city and a beautiful old city. And Toronto is actually kind of a beautiful new city. And I remember I took a girl there once. Ooh. We went for
a trip? Like, let's leave the country today.
Like on a getaway. We lived in New York.
Oh, for a weekend?
Yeah, we lived in New York at the time.
How long of a trip was this?
I mean, driving across New York is the most boring drive in the world.
It can be pretty, though.
Yeah,
New York is pretty.
Well, you just take the New York Thruway all the way, and it's just farmland, so you only see corn for 6 hours. So the whole trip, now I had been to Toronto before. Toronto is an immaculate city.
Cool.
So I'm telling her over and over again, wait till you see this city. Because we were used to like Boston and maybe like we'd been to Manhattan, you know, before.
Filthy.
Before Giuliani came and cleaned it up, of course. So we were used to these dirty cities. And I said, wait till you see Toronto. You can eat off the street.
Wow.
It is it like shines.
I don't think I've seen that.
No. I mean, the downtown area of Toronto is beautiful.
So what was it like?
We get there. Garbage unions on strike. There are literally mountains of trash.
No way.
Yeah.
Why is there a garbage union? Here in New Hampshire, you're personally responsible for your garbage. Actually, I guess that's not the case everywhere in New Hampshire. I'm misspeaking. Because in Manchester, I'm sure it's the city government, right?
Yeah, it's all city trash.
Where I live in Keene, a human is personally responsible for that own human's trash, I guess, in your dwelling.
Yes.
Wherever you're living. And you can contract with like whoever you want to take it away in any kind of way that you want. Like, I had never heard of this coming from New Jersey. That was one of the freedoms that I thought was kind of cool, because it was one of those arguments that people were like, oh, I would say, we don't need government for anything. And they'd be like, well, for anything. Clearly, you haven't thought this through. We need them for roads. And what about trash removal? And I would say, oh, yeah, maybe you're right. I need to think of some other examples. But now here in New Hampshire, they don't do trash removal. And everything's just fine.
Let me ask you a question. Because when people talk about the roads, I mean, I live in the roads in this city are terrible.
The roads here are horrible. Everywhere, they're horrible.
But they're already built. So it gets me thinking about this bigger question, this much bigger question than the roads. Was government a necessary step in human evolution? That we are now ready. I mean, we identify as voluntarists, so we want to live in a stateless world. I think we would both agree on that.
Yeah.
Maybe if it doesn't come in our lifetimes, we're still working towards that. Yeah. We want to be as free as possible in our own lives. We want to be as contacted by the government as little as possible.
Yes.
As in, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that we share that vision, but if you think about it, is it possible that government, and you look at how government has, I mean, governments kind of, they evolve and then devolve as they, you know, destroy themselves.
Yeah.
But governments, forms of government, I would say, have become increasingly reasonable. The life of a government, you know, gets increasingly...
What do you mean reasonable? Like, what's an example of a reasonable government?
Okay, like going from... Now, these are all bad forms of government.
Like, where they're like, okay, we can imprison you for any reason to, oh, we can only imprison you with just cause and due process.
No, all right, so you think about the Constitution, and then, like, you... Now, all of this is horrible. This is just a thought experiment, okay?
Yeah.
You think about, like, the Constitution, and then you go back, say, 1,500 years before the Constitution. Did things move in the right direction? Were lessons learned? And then there's the question of how do we outgrow it? How do we go from government to governance?
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Meow!
Meow.
Meow. Meow.
Meow.
Meow. Meow.
Meow.
Meow.
Freedom Fiends. What were you talking about, Brett?
Government?
You blew my mind a little bit.
People are going to think I'm some kind of mole, right? And now, you said earlier that part of being on the show is having a wrestling name.
Yeah, what's your wrestling name going
to
be?
I don't know, but the animal should be the mole, because people are like, this guy was defending the police, he's talking about government as a necessary step in human evolution.
So you're the masculine mole.
The masculine mole. Well, I don't know. Mole also is kind of like a, you know, a feature. Like a,
oh, yeah, right.
So I don't know and if I want to go with mole.
It can be sexy, too. Like, Will from Will and Grace had a mole that I thought looked good. Like, and who, the famous sex symbol Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I might need to spend a little more time in the lab on the wrestling animal name. But yeah, I was saying, comparing the United States form of government, which, you know, turned out not to really work out, with whatever was going on, say, 1500 years before that, because it seems over time, with you know, a few aberrations here and there, the world has become more rational. Or at least the ability for an individual to live more rationally, it's gotten easier. Now, let me explain a little more. Thousands of years ago, people were spending their whole lives to build cemeteries for pharaohs, right? Because they were so special. So the original setup in these early forms of government is, guess what, everybody? I'm a god. You know? That's right. So I rule over you. I have this authority over you because I'm a god. And then some time went by and they say, okay, no, I'm not a god, but I was chosen by the gods. And then it went on to like, okay, I wasn't chosen, but I know God and I talk to God and I know what God wants. So I kind of do the will of God on earth. And then some more time went on, and they said, no, yeah, okay, fine, that was silly. It's not God's will, it's the people's will. I do the people's will. So that gets us to about...
But isn't that true?
The founding of our country.
Don't the politicians do the people's will?
Well, they've had to come up with increasingly realistic rationalizations for their violence.
Well, I struggle with this one, whether or not that's true. Yeah, I get your point that it's a justification for these people having arbitrary authority and wielding it over other people. Yeah. But for me, I really question whether or not it is the will of the people. I mean, definitionally, you can say that actions taken without consent or in violation of people's consent is not the will of the people, right? Because otherwise they would consent to it.
Well, it doesn't I mean, it's almost moot because, and this is an idea that's kind of echoed through the 20th century, but it's certainly, there was a pretty public intellectual named Walter Lippmann, who was a progressive and, you know, 1910s, 1920s, came up with this idea that was really carried out by another guy named Edward Bernays called the engineering or the manufacturing of consent, right?
Whoa. What decade was this?
Yeah, it was 100 years ago.
Wow.
So,
they've been working on this a while.
But that essentially the public was the irrational mob, and their will needed to be molded by responsible men.
Oh my gosh, no, it's the opposite. It's the politicians that are the irresponsible mob.
But that's carried forward right to what we were complaining about earlier in the show with this television news elementary school play performance, right?
Yeah.
Opinions are being manufactured.
Right.
So the will of the people doesn't matter because is it their real will? Is it their real volition to want these things, to care about, I don't know, whatever issues they make for the election? I know abortion is always one.
Foreigners.
Foreigners.
Keep the foreigners away.
Taking America back from someone.
Take America back.
Going to be a hot one in 2016. These are just manufactured issues. But this idea that public opinion has been kind of constructed and molded, at least as a large-scale project goes back 100 years, but I think it's always been that way. You know, there always needed to be some kind of justification for the violence, right?
What's their justification now? It's still the people?
Well, see,
this is what the people want.
See, but as I went through that, like, government kind of backing away from this very bold, hey, I'm God, so, you know, you better do what I say. No, we're just trying to do what you want. And
right.
Then up to like, okay, look, we've got free things. We've got free stuff. You know? So yeah. it's kind of at the end, because when people stop buying into this, they have to kind of show, the government has to show its true self, which is violence, which we're seeing in the world right now.
Wait a minute, but Rand Paul doesn't seem like he's wielding a sword of violence. He's not promising free stuff either, so where does he fit in?
You know, that's an interesting question. I mean, Rand Paul seems like he wants to go back to this golden age of government that is based on the Constitution and the Bill of Rights.
This golden age that probably never existed.
No. I mean, there were all kinds of problems back then. It's not like they were all high-fiving and having a great time.
But they'll start. They weren't wearing jeans was the problem. He's going to bring jeans to the White House.
They might have even had better outfits.
Yeah, I'm sure Obama and surely Clinton wore jeans.
Oh.
I'm really hung up on this. I don't know why. It's
what do you think it is?
Clothing and attire.
Something has... You've seen something that has made this stick in your mind.
No, even when I was a kid, I mean, I remember asking my mom, like, where does George Bush shop?
Yeah.
Like, what clothes is he wearing? She was like, probably Banana Republic. Like, I don't know. I thought that was probably a good guess. What? Who knows? What?
He was the president when you were little?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do they have, like, Brooks Brothers suits, or what do they... Do they try and wear suits of the people? Like, oh, this isn't a fancy suit. I got this at JCPenney.
Politicians, it's hard to tell, because you can wear a really nice, expensive suit very conservatively, if you know what you're doing.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what they're doing, though.
If I was just... I mean, I'm just going to spitball this, but maybe the average price of a congressional suit is... I don't know, $700.
That sounds like a reasonable number.
I think that's reasonable.
I think you're right.
That's reasonable.
That's not anything to get hung up on, but most Americans aren't wearing $700 suits to work every day. So why are these politicians who supposedly represent us not wearing clothes that we wear?
Right.
They should be wearing t-shirts. I'm not wearing a t-shirt. I'm wearing a button-down. So are you. They could just wear a button-down.
What if they started...
And jeans.
What if they started and... They just were in their underpants. And they had to earn articles of clothing by keeping promises.
Oh, man. Or so, breaking promises, they might be right out.
When you see a fully dressed politician,
right,
you know this is a man or woman of his or her word.
Yes, he's been decorated.
Yes.
And I guess the tie should come first, too. I could see the underwear and a tie.
Underwear and tie.
Just so you know he's a politician.
The lady gets a scarf. You know,
right?
We're not trying to embarrass anyone.
No, yeah, of course not. And socks, I guess, would be next.
Yeah,
gotta have socks.
Yeah,
but it doesn't matter. I'm sorry. I this dressing up politicians in my head is something I'll leave for you later. But the other politicians who I'm following,
okay,
who are running in this election, Jeb Bush.
Oh, more Bushes.
Did he announce that he's running or not?
He's definitely running. Yeah, I mean, you can feel it.
You know who's coming,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Is Santorum running this time?
Gosh. I hope not.
So,
no, I hope he does. It's fun.
It is
Santorum
fun.
Is fun.
Santorum is a lot of fun. He's got sweaters, the sweater vest thing that he was so famous for. His, like, latent homosexuality that he always tries to keep a secret, but is so obvious to everyone around him. He visited Keene, my hometown,
yeah,
when he was running the last election, and I got to video record and sing some Christmas carols to him about legalizing cannabis and ending the drug war. He wasn't a fan.
He wasn't receptive?
No. But my friend Ian got to ask him if he has ever Googled himself, and that became a kind of a fun video to share around the internet.
Yeah. You think he's aware of the smear campaign? That
Yeah, he was clearly aware because he tried to divert the question like, I encourage people to seek out my website. Whatever. Santorum, he's not in the running. I guess not yet. Hillary Clinton's already getting made fun of on Saturday Night Live and The Onion. She just announced her candidacy today, right?
Something I believe like that. So. Yeah, I actually, you know, I wanted to bring that up because I tried to find a video of her...
She's been staying away from the media for like months.
It's interesting because the Rand Paul announcement was like a major event. There were like speakers and
balloons.
There was singing.
What?
There was singing.
Was it Bruce Springsteen?
No, it was the national anthem. They also did the pledge.
Oh, gross.
Now, why doesn't Rand Paul just say, hey, everybody, look, I know we love the pledge, right? We're conservatives. America, waving the flag. It was written by a socialist. Look it up.
Yeah, he should say that. That he would be doing them all a favor, but they'd probably turn against him. He's trying to please them and make them smile and think, I would have a beer with him. Because that's the real requirement for electing a president, right? Is his electability depends on whether or not you would have a beer with him.
No, I would say most presidents know. I mean,
isn't that the case for most people? Isn't that why they?
That seems like it was kind of a George Bush invention.
Oh, that was like a new thing.
Yeah, because George Bush was kind of made into this character. You know, I mean, he's this Connecticut blue blood, Ivy League, product of a really powerful family.
Yeah.
So that really, I guess people didn't think that was going to play in the year 2000, and they wanted kind of a change. Like, Clinton was seen, even though Clinton was an outsider, he was seen as the establishment. So they wanted this guy to kind of, like, strut in a cowboy hat and cowboy, with you know, with a chainsaw.
Wow.
You know.
I guess like a Theodore Roosevelt.
Yeah.
Part two.
So George W. Bush was kind of a public relations invention. You know, and he's the son of George H.W. Bush, who is like as inside as, you know, Washington gets. So the fact that he was able to run as an outsider is interesting. It shows the effectiveness of being able to manipulate perception and opinion.
To be completely honest, I want Hillary Clinton to win. That would be the most hilarious. That would be the most hilarious. 4 years, or 8 years, or 20 years, who knows, for comedy.
Okay. No, I would. Then I'm voting for Semtorum.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
So many times during the show with your cat stuff. Well, we actually have a snoring cat in the studio, which probably means it's time to wrap up the show.
That's right.
Yeah.
We've put the hamster in her brain to sleep.
Yes.
And I hope we've done the same for you, or at least you're getting there. As we decompress and decompose here in the studio.
Slowly, yeah.
Let's recap. This is redemption in the third act.
Yes.
We've said a lot of things.
We certainly have.
We've said too much.
Yeah, I can't imagine the word count for this show between the two of us.
Jeb Bush, Rand Paul, Vermin Supreme, Hillary Clinton. These people are all running for head, I don't know, do you have a funny name for president?
I don't.
For head dictator, head leader, whatever.
You know when it starts, it's going to be like 30 people. There's going to be more people than we can keep track of in this. Because
yeah, it's
Obama's
like March Madness.
So it's both parties bringing forward new candidates. So.
No, new candidates. Hillary is not new. That's one of the things that I think is like...
possible candidates.
Silly about her is like, who's going to run against Hillary Clinton? First of all, she ran, what, in 08?
Yeah.
And lost to Obama and then became Secretary of State, so she's got her little cozy position. She's waited all this time. She basically just deserves it. I mean, you waited, wait your turn, Hillary. It's Hillary's turn now.
Good thing about having her in the campaign is we'll get to hear more about Benghazi.
Why?
I was like,
because people are going to bring that up.
People haven't talked enough about Benghazi.
Really?
No, they have.
I get sick of it. Although I guess it's a tragedy what happened, yeah. Right? People died. There's right.
Yeah,
I don't really know much about it.
But it was really belabored, I think, by the Republicans for a long time, and they didn't really seem to get anywhere.
I feel ignorant now because I don't even know. Like I know she messed up something. She didn't call in for help when someone needed help. And she's Secretary of State.
Basically, so it goes up the chain of command. Like
who is she responsible for that? I'm sorry. Like I guess the Republicans. Tried to, I don't know.
Chain of command. That's how it goes.
How is she supposed to take responsibility? All day and all night, she's supposed to take phone calls like, we need more backup here at this embassy in Tehran. Like, okay, what do you want me to do for you? I'm Hillary Clinton. I'm going to sleep. You can call the general or call some military guy. Not me. I wear pantsuits. Never jeans.
Wow, you're starting to sound a little bit like a Hillary Clinton voter.
I'm there.
You're defending
I want
her.
Hillary. Yeah, that's what I said before we went to break is I want Hillary to win because that will be funny.
Okay.
And she is a crazy, war-hungry, big government sociopath.
All right.
Just like Obama, who's
a lot of enemy imagery there
her feet stink.
As well. Okay.
Yeah, and that will just be funny because she wants to control me and control you and everyone else in basically the universe. And I like to see these authoritarians like... I like to see the naked emperor marching down the street, you know? And no one... You know, everyone knows the emperor's naked except for him. I feel like that's Hillary Clinton. Like, she is Miss Dictator. And everyone knows it but her.
You know what I like? You know, what you say kind of reminds me of this phenomenon that I've watched play out over the last maybe 20 years of my life. Like, my dad was real into politics, so I remember, like, when George W. or H.W. was president, and he was, like, real into him and real into Reagan. And I've just seen it become, starting with Clinton in the late 90s, like, harder and harder for a person to be president as information becomes more and more available.
Because they lie, right? It's easier to catch them in a lie.
Yeah. But But as our access to information increases, and I guess that's what we're all about here. That's what we're doing.
Yeah. You know,
it becomes more and more of a challenge, just as it has for thousands of years. As people have become more rational, it's hard to say that you're in charge because you're God. So
right.
I've actually seen like a micro version of that just in the last 20 years, and that's awesome.
Well, I've seen a micro version of freedom increasing here in the last 4 years. You and I both live in New Hampshire. We had Rob on at the beginning of the show. He lives here in New Hampshire. This is his Rebel Love studio.
Yes.
We broadcasted tonight over Fiend Phone, free BIPCOT no-gov software that you can use to connect with others across long distances and sound like you have creamy radio audio.
Absolutely.
Hey, you have a website, Brett, right?
We've got a lot to be excited about here, Derek. SchoolSucksProject.com.
Worms. Well, I hope we've calmed the hamster in your brain tonight. This was a historic episode.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Broadcasting from a long-distance studio that we've never used before. The house that Michael built.
Absolutely.
Well, I hope you see freedom increasing in your personal life today and forever.
Good night.